It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your voicemails, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-272-9461.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Good evening to the listening audiences in Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, and beyond. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. We're really excited about tonight's program, so let's get to it. Tonight, we have four fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Ms. Auckland Kennedy.
Good evening.
Executive Producer and Chief Brand Strategist. The second, joining us by phone, is Mr. Wendell Major, who is the Democratic Party nominee for Alabama Attorney General. The third, joining us in the bottom half of the hour, is Ms. Moshe Donald, who is the Democratic Party nominee for District Attorney for Mobile County. And last, but no eyes least, is Mr. Charlie Moss.
Good evening.
Who is working the production board and keeping Kennedy for Alabama sounding good on the airwaves. So, Aqualyn, tell me something good.
Ching, ching. Great news at the gas pumps. We are saving money on gas, and hopefully it'll get a little bit better, especially as things get warmer and warmer across the country.
Well, in this world of very contentious things on the left and the right of the aisle, I would have to say the gas prices going down, however much they're going down, is something we can definitely agree on. So,
absolutely. Keep it going the right way.
All right. Now for the headlines. The first headline comes from AL.com. It reads, Alabama Democrats to pick a new chair. Chris England won't seek another term. It was written by Mike Kaysen and published on July 14th, 2022. The second headline comes from the Montgomery Advertiser. It reads, Alabama Democratic Party vacates nomination of Montgomery Family Court Judge candidate. It was written by Brian Lyman and published on July 19th, 2022. The final headline comes from Alabama Daily News. It reads, citing population loss, old facilities, Alabama counties continue to cut voting precincts. This article was written by Mary Sell and published today, July 21st, 2022. So a lot of interesting stuff happening throughout the course of the state. Very, very interesting things happening within the four walls of the Democratic Party. But before we get into any of that, let's go to the phone lines and see if our first guest has arrived. Mr. Major, are you on the line?
I am. Good evening. How are you doing?
Good evening. Good evening. How are you doing today?
Outstanding. Good evening to your listening audience.
Well, you know, we are very, very thankful that you've taken the opportunity to spend a few minutes talking to us tonight. So before we get into anything with the nature of the campaign and what your priorities are and advocacy, could you just take a few minutes and introduce yourself to the listening audience who may be hearing your name for the very first time?
Yes, my name is Wendell Major. I'm the Democratic nominee for Alabama's Attorney General. I am a 36-year veteran of law enforcement.
Okay.
Having served as a correction officer, patrol officer, narcotics investigator, detective, from homicides to theft and corporate crime. Served as a lieutenant, a captain, with 10 band in nearly every division of the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department.
Okay.
The largest department in the sheriff's office, been an attorney for the past 15 years. Graduated the FBI National Academy, and I am a licensed polygraph examiner as well as an attorney here.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. And one more thing, just so the audience is clear, could you tell us just where you grew up?
I grew up in Fairfield, Alabama. Graduated Fairfield High School.
Okay.
In the Fairfield Public School. Then I joined the United States Marine Corps. Well, I served
Hurrah.
Until I got married.
There you go. There you go. You know, I'm a Navy veteran myself, and I know the importance of that Navy Marine Corps team when it comes to our country being successful from a military perspective. So thank you for your service.
Definitely. Thank you for yours. It's my honor to serve the people of this country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you talk about your background in the military and then your background in law enforcement. So when is it that you decided that you wanted to be an attorney?
I was a detective involved in a homicide case here of a young woman who was a street walker who was engaged in prostitution. She was killed
okay.
and murdered, and her body was found on the side of a road. I was assigned to investigate the case as a young detective, and in that process of that investigation, I encountered a prosecutor who told me they knew more about this case that I investigated for nearly 6 to 7 months.
Oh, wow.
They were an attorney. I said, I'll go to law school and figure this out because I don't stop until I get the people I'm seeking.
Well, we are glad that you did that and decided to make that transition. So now let's talk a little bit about the office that you are seeking. So as a Democratic Party nominee, your desire is to be the state of Alabama's next attorney general. So what was it that made you decide to run for that particular position?
Because as a law enforcement officer, I understand that the office is about public safety. And I think we need to put public safety over petty partisan politics.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched for a number of years as the deaths in Alabama have increased. In actuality, in 2020, more people died in Alabama than were born.
Oh, wow.
That's a challenge to our state. We're not going to be economically viable in the future if we continue with that trend.
Sure.
Violent crime is on the rise, and I've watched that happen. I'm serving as a law enforcement officer here in the state, and I think we can do something about it and not concentrate on our petty political differences. Let's do the things we can do. We all agree that public safety is important. Our laws must be enforced, and we cannot allow people to be murdered in the street and go unavenged.
Absolutely. Now, there are a couple of things that I wanted to touch on in this conversation. They don't necessarily have to do with your candidacy for attorney general specifically, but there are just a couple of things I want to do in terms of probably clearing some misconceptions that folks in the audience may have when they typically see that somebody has Democrat next to their name. So let's just clarify a few things right quick, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
So do you support us having a strong military as a nation?
Absolutely. I think a strong military is essential to keep our country free and maintain our U.S. constitutional rights.
Sure. Do you feel as though law enforcement should be properly resourced in terms of doing their job?
Absolutely. Law enforcement needs to focus on its job, and that is the enforcement of the laws and maintaining public order, and we need to fund those agencies to do that. Too often we've put social mandates on law enforcement, which I think they're ill-suited to do, and just frankly, it's not the best organization designed to do that. Law enforcement agencies have been designed and have been empowered to enforce the law, and we need to fund the enforcement of law so that we can maintain peace and prosperity.
Okay. All right. And part of the reason why I do that is I find a lot of times there are assumptions associated with talking points that come out of the D.C. Beltway. And a lot of times I don't think that we locally do a good job of kind of distinguishing where we may differ from that. So the average person that I meet that's in the Democratic Party is not a person who is not supportive of law enforcement. Of course, we want to hold individuals accountable in those specific situations where specific individuals are not doing what they need to do. But by and large, I find that we are supportive of law enforcement. I find that we are supportive of the military as well. And then the last thing I needed to ask you about is what is your stance on the Second Amendment?
The Second Amendment, I believe that the Constitution gives every American the authority to carry and possess a firearm. I think we should exercise that authority. Now, it's subject to reasonable regulation by the state.
Sure.
And for those reasonable regulations that the state chooses, they do. But I believe, and I have fought for, and I will stand for, the rights of individuals to carry firearms for personal protection.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I thought it was really important for us to kind of touch off on those things for the reason that I mentioned before. So now let's go back to the Attorney General office that you're seeking. So if you are fortunate enough to be elected, can you just take a little time and tell the listening audience what your priorities would be?
My priorities will be to focus on violent crime.
Okay.
We have an uptick in violent crime throughout the country, particularly in Alabama. We have an increase, particularly in the metropolitan area. Yet we have a very low crime rate in our rural areas.
Sure.
We need a comprehensive criminal justice plan that will allow us to reduce the violent crimes that are occurring throughout our state to the levels that are acceptable to people in the entire state. We have an overburdened prison system, yet we don't distribute the resources of the prison beds, according to where the violent crimes are occurring.
Okay.
We need to do that. And hopefully so, somebody who violates the crime in a very rural area of the state will face the same punishment as a person who violates the crime in a populated area of state, so that deterrent really exists.
I got you. Well, thank you for that. What additional priorities beyond focusing on violent crime specifically are things that you are interested in getting involved in?
One of the things, as a law enforcement officer for 36-plus years, I have never arrested a person for a minor possession of marijuana that solved a rape, robbery, murder, homicide, theft, or burglary. I think we need to lobby our legislature to legalize marijuana, or should I say decriminalize it and tax it and use those resources to focus on mental health, law enforcement, and...
it's interesting that you mentioned it that way, because we know that a lot of what has existed historically as the law has a tendency to focus not necessarily on an ill across the board, but something that we've essentially deemed as being immoral. And so when you look at something like marijuana possession, marijuana use, marijuana distribution, it's just interesting where we are in our society, so that there's been this general acceptance of medical marijuana. And in some places in the country, they have decriminalized it. And in other places in the country, they have legalized it. So for the benefit of the listening audience, can you just take a moment and define the difference between decriminalization and full legalization?
Yes. Decriminalization would be the instance of the legislature proposing what possession or use of marijuana would be regulated in the state.
Okay.
And not be prosecuted by the state.
Sure.
I mentioned that your listening public will be aware of, possession of marijuana is illegal throughout the country under federal law.
Okay.
The federal government wastes no resources in prosecuting those individuals.
Sure.
Because it doesn't tend to assist in the reduction of crime in the country.
I got
Yet
you.
Our state, particularly, you've wasted its resources, and I'll tell you this because I've been a law enforcement officer, that a law enforcement officer makes a misdemeanor marijuana arrest, and any arrest is going to be off the streets for anywhere from 45 minutes or an hour and a half.
Sure.
Right? And if he's arrested somebody for marijuana, that's 45 minutes or an hour and a half. He's not stopping a rape, a robbery, a murder, a burglary, or assault.
And the thing about it that's interesting,
number of resources.
I was going to say, the thing about it that's interesting that you've touched on, and you've articulated it in a way that I think doesn't normally happen by folks who may not have spent the time in the leadership in the law enforcement community that you have, is that you've articulated it from the perspective of resources, that everything's a trade-off. So if you're spending time just processing administratively the folks who you are arresting for possession or use of marijuana, then that's a minute, an hour, a day, a dollar that can't be used to focus on something that is much more violent, much more significant in nature.
Right. And I respond to the homes of people. They're not complaining about somebody sitting in the house smoking marijuana. They're complaining about somebody stealing their lawnmower out of the house, somebody stealing their car, somebody assaulting their daughter, somebody mm-hmm. assaulting their husband. They're complaining about violent crimes and thefts that actually harm people. Individuals who smoke marijuana, I would suggest they're not doing very smart things. But there are a number of people who don't do smart things. They consume alcohol too much.
Sure.
They smoke too many cigarettes. There's a number of things they do. But we need to use our law enforcement resources to affect the violent crime that is damaging our community and reducing our freedoms.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. So we've touched on two areas with regards to priorities. One was an overall plan to reduce violent activity throughout the state. The second is not putting an emphasis on marijuana enforcement as much so that you can reposition those resources to focus on your first priority, which is the reduction of violent crime. So violent crime and what's happening primarily within neighborhoods that are fueled by the drug trade are typically the things that people first talk about when they're interviewing folks who are running for the position that you're running for. I'd actually like to transition and get your point of view on two things that aren't talked about as much. The first is the issue of what we would define as white-collar crime. And the second are, call it a political or even ethics-related violations that occur. What's your plan with regards to those two categories?
Public corruption is one of the most vile crimes we have because it abuses the public trust. It harms everybody all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We need to focus on those individuals who exercise whatever government authority they do, that they adhere to the law. And that means we have to have an attorney general who understands that the letter of law is the letter of law. It applies to those individuals who are elected, those individuals who are not elected, those individuals who have been entrusted to carry out the law. It applies to them, and we hold them to the highest standard of ethical conduct. And we need to do that every day. So the attorney general should have a concern about whether they're sharing the proper records in municipal court or the city council or wherever, that they are actually affording the citizens the privileges of their citizenship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And how about just the general category of white-collar crime? What's your plan in terms of reducing that?
We will form a task force to address that as well. I have investigated a number of financial crimes where corporations have abused our elderly, have abused our commercial business processes, and we need to focus on stopping those people who do, because they harm commerce. And commerce is the lifeblood of our democracy. It's about making money. That's what our businesses are formed for, so that people can buy and purchase the things their hearts desire, their pursuit of happiness. And we need to use the resources of the Attorney General's office and the state of Alabama, its law enforcement resource, to address that, to ensure that if you steal a chicken, you get prosecuted, and if you bilk the people out of millions of dollars, you get prosecuted as well.
Yes, absolutely. You know, one of the things that kind of popped in my head as you were going through that is there was an HBO series that came out in the early 2000s that was called The Wire. Are you familiar with that show at all?
Very familiar, and very realistic too.
You're right, and there was a quote in there that I can't say exactly the way the quote said because I don't want to get in trouble. But basically, one of the detectives said, when you follow drugs, you get drug dealers and drug users. But when you follow the money, you never know where it's going to end up taking
you. Where you're going to go.
And so, exactly. You know, nobody who's committing those crimes in the areas where they occur are individuals who have the resources, the infrastructure to manage a supply chain. But those dollars are actually coming from somewhere. And I think it's important, as important, if not more important, to focus on that as well. So, hey,
paying the rent on the warehouses that are housing drugs. Somebody's paying the mules that are carrying it and the tractor trailers that are going up and down our highways. And we need to follow the money and where that comes from and prosecute those individuals if we want to deter the processing of illegal narcotics throughout our state.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, hey, I'm going to have a few more questions for you. But before I do that, if folks want to learn more about you, or to make a financial contribution to your campaign, how can they go about doing that?
WendellMajor.com. It's very easy. WendellMajor.com. najor.com. Then you'll find my website. You'll find about my positions. You'll find an ability to volunteer, to purchase a sign, to donate money. However you want to get involved to make our state safer, please do. I implore you to review my positions. If you agree with me, join, pick up a ballot and follow me. And we will lead to a safer Alabama for us all.
Absolutely. And we still have a few more minutes before we end up ending this segment. Is it okay if I just go ahead and ask you a couple more questions?
Sure.
So, you know, one of the things that I found as I've talked to folks, and those are the folks that are outside of the political circles, sometimes people don't completely understand what is included in the scope of the responsibility of the job. So generally speaking, yes, the attorney general is the chief law enforcement officer for the state. But a lot of times what comes out in the national media is, you know, the attorney general of the state of Alabama is suing the Biden administration for fill in the blank, whatever that happens to be. So with that as a backdrop, can you just take a minute and just explain the scope of the attorney general's role and take a minute to say to comment in, on any of those national high visibility things that may be floating around as well?
The attorney general is the lawyer for the people of the state of Alabama. His job is primarily to ensure that the laws passed by the legislature are dutifully carried out. That goes down to making sure that every elected official complies with the responsibilities of that elective office and carries his duty out within the laws of the state, complying with the state constitution and the United States Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And in saying that, it relates to filing appeals, or not filing appeals, but defending appeals from criminal defendants who appeal their convictions, to ensuring that, hey, the local municipal court holds the court within the under the laws of the state of Alabama, and that nobody is punished or deprived of property without due process of law.
Okay.
In saying that, to address some of the issues, we have an attorney general who, with the opioid epidemic as being as horrendous as it has been and the devastation it's had in Alabama, has opted out of a number of suits for the pharmaceutical companies who have readily acknowledged that they have oversold or had drugs overprescribed in our state and were willing to make amends, but the attorney general chose not to avail themselves of that money that we could use to defend and protect people who suffer from the problems caused by the opioid epidemic, such as mental health, drug addiction, and our criminal system is overflowing with people who suffer from drug addiction.
Absolutely.
The number of our crimes have risen because of drug addiction, yet we have not gotten the resources for people readily willing to offer the money from the profits they made from that.
Absolutely.
I think the attorney general in this state needs to stand up and do something about that. And if you elect me, I'll do all I can to ensure that those individuals who abuse our citizens by selling them illegal narcotics or legal narcotics or over-prescribing them, such that they know that they offend our the people of our state, that they pay. And we reduce their effects on our community.
Absolutely. Well, hey, thank you so much.
Also, I have one other I have to mention this. As your attorney general, I will not waste the resources of the state of Alabama for law enforcement on chasing around young women or their health care providers about their health care choices. I will do something to reduce the violent deaths that people are occurring in our streets every day. We have to reduce the number of violent crimes, and we have to change that number. More people should be being born or coming to live in the state than are dying. And I plan on making that happen. Impossible.
Absolutely. Well, hey, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to spend some time with us today. For those of you who have been listening, that is Mr. Wendell Major, who is the Democratic Party nominee for Alabama Attorney General. So thank you very, very much, Mr. Major. You be careful. Best to you and your family as you're out there on the campaign trail.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you to the listening audience.
All right, man. You take care now. Wow. Well, very, very thankful to Mr. Wendell Major for coming and spending the first half of the show with us. You know, this is part of the vision that we had here at Kennedy for Alabama when we first started the show. We wanted to invite the candidate on, simply ask them some questions about their background as well as what their priorities are, and then allow them to tell you exactly what it is they would do if they were elected. And so we really enjoyed being able to do that, and we are going to go to our bottom half of the hour break now, and then we will come back and continue this conversation with our next guest. You are listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market. Specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications, Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
What do business, municipality, government, and nonprofit leaders have in common? The desire to win, to fulfill the mission for the benefit of their customers and constituents. That's why they call us at Kennedy Strategic Communication. At KSC, we help our clients develop strategies for targeting and converting their target markets. We provide branding, public relations, marketing, advertising, executive coaching, campaign and political support, and other business services. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, success.com.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. We are going to go immediately to the phone lines and see if we have our guest on. Hello, you're on the line with Kennedy for Alabama.
Hello. This is Phyllis Harvey Hall.
Hey, Miss Harvey Hall, how are you doing today?
I am doing well, despite all the rain that we've had.
Oh my gosh, hasn't it been crazy? It's like I'm ready to get a canoe to try to figure out whether or not I'm going to be able to get home today.
And I have needed tons of caffeine just to sort of stay alert.
I bet. So you are on Kennedy for Alabama for the very first time, so thank you for taking a few moments to speak with us.
Thank you for inviting me to speak with you and this wonderful audience. I appreciate
appreciate it.
All right. So for individuals who are hearing your voice for the very first time, can you let them know what it is that you are running for?
Certainly, certainly. I am Phyllis Harvey Hall, and I am running for U.S. Congress, House District 2, and that is the southeast corner of Alabama.
Okay, thank you for that. And take a step back before we get into the specifics of the issues and just tell folks a little bit about you. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? And what did you do professionally in your career?
Okay, thank you. Well, I am a rural county girl for birth. I was born in Conecuh County,
okay.
Evergreen specifically, and I grew up there. And I finished high school, and shortly thereafter, we moved to Montgomery, Alabama, where I attended The Alabama State University.
Okay.
And majored in education. And after majoring in education, I was hired immediately to teach at Montgomery Public Schools. And I became a sixth grade language arts teacher. I moved around a little in the system as far as teaching content and had 25 years of excellent service and working with families and children, changing lives. And in the meanwhile, finished up a couple of other degrees and certification in leadership. And my husband and I live here in Montgomery currently with my daughter and granddaughter. And my husband works in service also as a medic. I have continued my service after retiring from the Montgomery Public School System. I've worked as a NAEP coordinator for the Southern District in Alabama,
okay.
where I led a team of professionals in to do the Nation's Report Card. I've worked with Family Sunshine Center. In the meanwhile, I've worked with various nonprofits, including the Family Sunshine Center. A lot of volunteer work with various organizations, including Habitat, the Montgomery Museum of Fine Arts, SCIP, Save Kids of Incarcerated Parents, and just a lot of experiences that have continued in my journey for service and betterment of all of us.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for walking us through your background. So, hey, just wanted to let you know we're getting a little bit of feedback from your phone. Are you on speakerphone by any chance?
I am not. That's
okay.
The odd thing. But let me – you want me to try speakerphone?
No, no. What sound – right now it sounds good. But we do need you to talk a little –
No, I'm on speakerphone.
No, no. We do not want you on speakerphone, but we want you to increase your volume a little bit.
I've adjusted my volume. I've been hearing that echo. Is that better if I turn the volume down lower?
I think so. Yeah, let's try
that. I've adjusted my volume. It's really low now.
Okay.
Okay, we think we can hear you. Can you hear us?
I have to thank God I'm able to hear it. It's faint, but I can make out what you're saying, Mr. Kennedy. Yes.
Okay. All right. So now that we've got the audio in the right direction, let me ask you this. If you are fortunate and blessed enough to be elected into this seat, what would be your priorities?
My priority would be to work to make certain that we actually implement high efficiency broadband internet connection throughout this district.
Oh,
that
wow.
would be one of my top goals to get done, because to oversee to make certain it's done. Because with all the recent legislation and funding, I would work with state and local authorities to make certain that we have movement and progress on that. And another one of the things that I would love to see us, I would work to make certain, is that we actually pass the John Lewis Voter Rights Act. If it's not done before I get there, but if it's not, I would certainly be a champion to make sure that every American knows that his or her vote counts and that it is important, and we would make certain that that vote is actually being able to be made and counted, where people have the right to elect representation of their choice. And there's been much done, Mr. Kennedy, just recently. When we think about what's happened with the cap on insulin charge, that would have charges for seniors. That would have been something I would have wanted to have done. Also, I would love to make sure that we're taking care of our seniors. You know, we have people who are have worked all their lives and receive a check of $800 per month.
Oh, wow.
Just because of the low wages that we had 40, 50 years ago. So certainly making sure that they continue to receive cost of living increases. And then to make certain that our small businesses, especially in rural areas, have the training that they need. I will, I've already talked with several business people, even in the Small Business Administration director here, about hosting conferences for our small business to receive help for incubators, and especially for what we call solopreneurs now.
Sure, sure. So I actually want to go back to two of the things that you mentioned in your priorities, just to make sure that the listening audience understands what your specific advocacy is. So with the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, keep in mind that our audience here at 90 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile, 93.1 in Montgomery, and WVNN in Huntsville, the listening audience is primarily conservative. So sometimes they hear the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, but don't necessarily understand what it includes. So could you take just a moment to explain what is included as a part of that?
Well, yes. When we, 19, you know, we passed the Voting Rights Act in 1965, but since then, there have been legislation, court ruling, that have actually stricken, have actually struck down portions of the Voting Rights Act. And in that, when we, Shelby, the case with Shelby, we lost a portion of the legislation where we could actually challenge when there were voting improprieties or when people were not getting their vote counted. So in that voting right legislation, it would restore the pre-clearance that was taken away for, let's say, historical problems with voting, especially in marginalized communities. And that would be a major proponent of it. But it would also make certain that we are not having the problems that we are having now, that they would, you know, for us voting, we all know that you have to show ID.
Okay.
But it would actually, I think, authorize parts of the DOJ to make sure that states have political subdivisions that are drawn properly. It would help us to make certain that IDs are definitely there, but it would extend it. And it would notify the public when there was anything wrong. We've had a lot of, I would say, questions recently about election integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the voting rights at this particular act would make certain that preclearance is always approved if there's a problem, and it would make sure that states are just following what was set in place 10 years ago instead of especially the preclearance when there's ever a problem with our state legislatures just taking over and at any moment changing precincts, just changing information without proper notice to the public and without any real genuine need to make those changes.
Hey, let me
really
answer.
Restore what was taken away.
Let me insert here for just a second. So one of the things that often comes out when folks talk about voter ID, we really do need to put this in historical context, and this is mostly for the listening audience to know. So when the original voter ID requirements were put into place, the core of the problem is that there was the requirement, but the acceptable forms of ID were not all the different types of IDs that were issued by the state. That has changed over time, but that's part of the reason why the reaction to the voter ID requirement has been so strong. So imagine the state issues an ID at school, for example, or they issue an ID to somebody who still has their ability to vote but is in jail prior to going to trial. but they wouldn't accept that ID as an acceptable confirmation of who you were. In addition to that, we know about the fact that the areas where folks had the highest propensity to vote in the rural communities, that some of those DMVs where you would get an ID were closed down. So it's, all of these are the types of things that the John Lewis Voting Act would ultimately address so that we wouldn't have those problems going forward. But I think it's important for the listening audience to have that context, that it's just not people saying, oh, wait a minute, we don't want to have IDs.
Right. And if I'm correct, and I do believe that it would also help with the redrawing of lines. Also, you know, we hear all the time about redistricting and gerrymandering. It would also be beneficial there to make sure that populations do not see that their votes are diluted. And that's what we said, that one-to-one correspondence is lost.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other thing that I just wanted to highlight on, and we only have about a minute and a half before we go to the break, but small businesses and supporting small businesses in rural communities. We know if you take the top five cities or the top six cities in the state of Alabama, there's a lot of support. But when you get into those rural communities, there's not as much support. So could you talk about that a little bit more in terms of how you would address that? And we have about a minute left before the break.
One of the ways to address that is, as I said, we would use appropriations and grants to actually put accelerators in those areas, and so that small businesses would have access to more of a one-to-one help that could help them in development of their business from a one-to-one standpoint. The Small Business Administration here in the regional area does do some of the work. A lot of that is focused on veterans. But you have a lot of youth, and we need to make certain that they understand business 101, business finance, and that's where my accelerators and even our desire to host small business conferences and fairs around the district would be beneficial.
All right. Well, thank you for that. We are actually going to go to the break and pay a few bills, but we will have you back on the other side to continue this conversation. For the listening audience, thank you for staying with us. You are listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, Success.com.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market. Specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications, Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just now tuning in, we started a wonderful conversation with Ms. Phyllis Harvey Hall, who is the Democratic nominee for United States Congress in District 2, which covers parts of Montgomery and the Wiregrass section in the state. So, Ms. Harvey Hall, are you still there?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. So, hey, one thing that I wanted to get feedback from you on is that President Biden announced the cancellation of $10,000 of student debt and up to $20,000 for Pell Grant recipients. So what were your thoughts about that?
Now, I have not read all of that, but that means that if you were a Pell Grant recipient and you needed loans, you were forgiven $20,000, correct?
That is correct.
Well, you know, that is based off of Pell Grants are only, I can tell you from someone who came from a rural county and a girl who was the first one to graduate high school in my family. That was a big deal.
Oh, wow.
And so just imagine that and had no one in my family could really help me with the guidance in going to college. They just said I should go. It was just push education, but they couldn't help me or guide me. So I was on my own. Some counselors, we had one counselor at the school. I was unprepared for the cost of college.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before we started getting into private colleges, a lot of private for-profit colleges. So at that point, I went out of state and incurred a lot of student debt. I was able, through a lot of suffering through my first couple of years, to pay back that particular loan. But you have those loans. Pell Grants are based strictly off of income and poverty level.
Okay.
And you can only receive it if you do not have the income. So when we're looking at students who qualify for that, that tells you they've suffered hardship. And so forgiving them that debt and for that that they've been saddled with throughout the years, especially with the rising cost and the inflation of for-profit colleges, tuition has gone up tremendously since my years. And I'm sharing my experience of something of over 2-3 decades ago. Today's cost for college, I look at it, what I paid for one semester, these students can't even get one good week in education.
Right.
So the cost, because we've allowed for-profit in, cost has risen exponentially. And that was a bit of exploitation there. We all know that that happened. So I think that we have these students who, yes, maybe we're not guided. We pushed four-year colleges. I think that it's a good thing to relieve some of that debt from them. I've always been a proponent of taking the interest off of the loan myself.
I see.
I think that's the best thing we could do. But with what President Biden has done and others, I support that because we have a generation of young people that are just saddled with debt, some of it from lack of counseling, some of it because of the high cost of education now.
Mm.
And I propose that we go back to free public colleges more.
You know, it's interesting. Thank you for sharing your views on that. I know the news has been relatively recent, but you actually made me think of something as you were talking about the group of folks who go to college versus the group of folks who may go directly into the workforce. And we know that historically unions have been able to do training that helps to get people into the workforce faster. And then obviously in relationship with management, they come up with benefits that allow people to have long-term careers. What's your point of view about unions do you support? Are you challenged by them? Just let the listening audience know where you stand on unions.
As a person who taught for years and was always a member of a union and watching I go to my childhood. My father worked in a steel mill. Well, you know about that, about the heat he worked around,
mm-hmm.
cases where people died on that job. So I'm a big proponent of unions because that's one way that people coming together for collective bargaining allows workers to have safer work environments, a better pay, and we know that companies must make a profit, but we've also seen the other end of that from greed. So I am a huge proponent of unions. I support them because they have given us the middle class. And over the past 15 years here in Alabama, with the right to work misnomer and the actual labor being some of the legislation impacting unions, we saw a decrease. But thank God now we look at the Met Coal incident in Birmingham area. Mm-hmm. We see unions where people are coming back together to demand that they have better working conditions and that they have being able to take care of their families and have what I call a pride in your work, where you can work a job, have health care, you have days off, you have family leave, you are able to have the dignity of work. I'm a big proponent. And I think unions give that, help people to have that dignity, and they also give workers a voice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I never personally served in a union, but I have family members who did. And as you went through the list of things that are considered to be normal benefits now in the workplace, it's like to a single line item, all of those things originally sourced from the union. So thank you for taking the opportunity to share your thoughts on that. So
thank you.
With that, we are actually coming to the end of the show. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. If folks want to get in contact with you, learn more about your campaign, volunteer, or contribute, what is the best way for them to do that?
Thank you for asking. If anyone wants to be involved in this campaign, and I hope they do because we are people-focused, people-centered, and I tell everyone this is a common sense girl running to be right middle of the line to support people, not necessarily a party. But you can go to Phyllis, P-H-Y, L-L-I-S, for Congress, and that's F-O-R, forcongress.com, and you can find out how to support this campaign with your time and your resources.
Well, thank you so much for that. Thank you for sharing your views, and do us a favor and be careful when you're out traveling around the wide geographical footprint that is the Wiregrass.
And thank you so much, Mr. Kennedy, for inviting me to share on this space. And we are truly blessed, and I continue to look to God to continue to bless us while we're on the road. And same to you.
All right.
God bless us all.
All right. Thank you so much. You take care now.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. So with that, we have come to the end of this episode of Kennedy for Alabama. We are thankful to be able to do this every week and to bring you various diverse views, some from the left and some from the right. So with that, we're going to go ahead and sign off for this week's episode. You are listening to Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is, or has been, Kennedy for Alabama. You guys take care. We'll see you next time. Kennedy for Alabama is coming to the River Region for Season 5. Tune in on Sundays at 2 o'clock p.m. right here on News Talk 93.1. From issues with housing and healthcare to education and employment, we will continue to elevate our political discourse by having respectful conversations throughout the election cycle. We will continue to invite normal everyday people, as well as political candidates, into the studio for a candid conversation about Alabama. Kennedy for Alabama, Sunday afternoons, 2 to 3 p.m., News Talk 93.1.